It can be tough enough to figure out what other people are thinking and feeling, and at least we have the power to ask them. Trying to figure out the minds of the other creatures on the earth can be difficult indeed. Spending time around other animals can help. Our first guest this hour has certainly done that. Gay Bradshaw runs the Carulose Center in the Applegate Valley, an animal sanctuary, and more. Gay Bradshaw's research into elephants resulted in a book, a lot of media coverage, and a new term, trans species psychology. She speaks this evening at Southern Oregon University and joins us by phone now. Hi, Gay.
Hi there.
Good to have you here today. How and when did you begin to study animals so closely?
Well, I've been living with animals all my life. I think a lot of people have. But really, from a perspective of science, that was when I went to Africa in the 1990s. I was part of a National Science Foundation team looking at large carnivores, in particular the lions there. And it was then when I came across the incident of these elephants, which you spoke about, which sort of really started me on this longer journey professionally. And that was this extraordinary observations of these rhinoceroses that are black as well as white rhinoceroses, which are endangered, and over 100 were found killed. And there was a big mystery, but then it turned out that they were young male elephants who had done the killing. So that really seeded my research, and what I did when I investigated more thoroughly was find out that really they had been doing this because they had suffered, they were suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, because of a succession of traumas from human violence.
So the human violence perpetrated upon the elephants resulted in elephant violence upon the rhinoceroses?
Yes, and that's similar to what we see in humans, is that when people have suffered tremendous trauma and have PTSD, then essentially you can look at it from the perspective of the brain. All sorts of things go wrong, and misinterpretations and stress. And so they really were injured when mentally and emotionally at very young age, like 2 to 3 years old, when their families were killed, their mothers were killed. They witnessed that. Then they were translocated, moved away. They were prematurely weaned, which means they had not completed a very important part of their development, which is also not just physiological, but just psychological and emotion. And they essentially were attacking rhinos when they went into premature must, which is this sexual maturity 15 years earlier than normal. And that was another trauma because they had not been in the usual tutelage of and the mentoring of older bulls. And so essentially all of those kind of conspired together, and they ended up killing and sexually assaulting and killing rhinoceroses.
Wow. So these really were, in a sense, at-risk elephants. They'd grown up in some fairly difficult conditions.
Yes. The parallels are very, very strong because of what we know about the brains and neuroscience.
So there's been a field of animal psychology for a long time. How does trans-species psychology differ from that?
Well, it's really in the name of trans, in the sense of understanding that what we understand about our minds and brains really cuts across species. Animal psychology traditionally and conventionally has looked at animals, how they behave. That's animal behavior, animal psychology, and kind of added on some thinking and emotions to that. But it's always seen animals as other and different than humans. And so trans-species psychology really recognizes the full corpus of scientific theory and data, which has been accumulating since Darwin, which says we can look at ourselves, humans, and other animals, cats, dogs, elephants, bears, reptiles, through the same neuropsychological lens. So in other words, we can look at how an individual is feeling and thinking and expressing a human and a bear in the same way, through the same lens.
How do you find the balance, though, Dr. Bradshaw, between making assumptions based on how our brains work and being able to figure out something about what an animal is thinking versus going too far and anthropomorphizing them in some way?
Well, I'll answer that in two ways. First of all, we have that same issue with each other. For example, I'm talking to you, and you and I are making certain assumptions, right?
Sure.
That we're both human and things like that. But we both are vulnerable to making a mistake, what we call a projection or assumption about each other, right? So we have that same issue with other animals. But what we do is we have a basic idea saying, well, you know, our brains are pretty much the same. We have a feeling for how we respond. There's data in our own experience, data in science, on how individual humans behave, et cetera. And obviously there is variation at the individual level. But because we can look at animals in that same way, in other words, that they have the same capacities, they have the brains that have the same structures and processes, cogs and wheels that we do that govern the fundamental processes of thinking, emotion, consciousness, and all those kinds of things, then we can actually look at, say, bear, grizzly bear natural history through that psychological, neuropsychological lens and start to interpret what they're doing in the same way that we might when we're looking at ourselves or another culture anthropologically.
Dr. Gabe Bradshaw, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the executive director of the Carolos Center in the Applegate Valley. She'll be speaking at Southern Oregon University tonight at 7 at the Meese Room at the Hannon Library, part of the campus theme observance for this year, talking about the world through the eyes of our carnivore kin. You can join this conversation on the Jefferson Exchange now at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So as you've come to know animals better over the years, I mean, how much would you say we share across species, across phyla, families, and all that?
Well, basically we share everything, you know, just down to whatever level. The differences are really what we would look at as cultural. So species differences by trans-species psychology, by basically the corpus of science, says, you know, the variations between species, between humans and other animals, is really at the level of different cultures. So our particular species or particular culture right now has a different set of values, a different sort of ethics than a grizzly bear does, than a puma does. So we really need to look at, that's what it really has pointed us toward, is saying, well, that's interesting, because we have the same capacities, then why are humans doing these kinds of things, and why are pumas doing these things or not doing these things? So, for example, why are humans really so violent? Relatively speaking, carnivores, bears and pumas and wolves, crocodiles are not violent. When they do kill, it's to eat, and it's very parsimonious. Yet humans, our modern humans, use mass violence. We commit things that no other animal has done. So essentially what it does is it really points the finger at us going, well, how can we become more like them? You know, how can we start to emulate the grizzly bear, who really is quite pacific, who really gets along? And if you look back in time before colonization, you'll see that for example, in North America, American Indians and the carnivores lived quite well. That didn't mean that someone didn't get killed once in a while, but it was very negligible. And it was always, quote unquote, for a purpose that was very specific, not just mass killing or not just sort of this cleansing, as some scientists are calling it, carnivore cleansing, which is going on and which is legal and promulgated by the wildlife services.
So the creatures that we fear, the ones that move fast and have big teeth, I mean, they also make good parents. They can be cuddly partners with each other. They're decent companions, all of that?
Yes, yes. And in fact, that is really the quote-unquote discovery. But again, from the perspective of neurosciences or neuropsychology, trans-species psychology, it's not a surprise. What really is the surprise, and a number of people are really, you know, scientists are starting to really investigate this, is why are we so different? You know, why are we doing things that other animals don't do?
Gabe Bradshaw, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, executive director at the Carolos Center in the Applegate Valley, speaking tonight at Southern Oregon University about the world through the eyes of our carnivore kin. 800-838-3760 if you'd like to join this discussion, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Gay, in your studies, have there been a lot of moments of, whoa, I did not know that would happen?
I'll give you one example. It's in my new book called Carnivore Minds that just come out, and it's about white sharks. Every chapter in the book is on a specific species or, you know, set of species, and there's one chapter on white sharks. And it was phenomenal. I met these amazing people who work very closely with white sharks. Typically, they're not necessarily scientists. They're people who are, like one man, Frederick Boy, he's Belgian, and he is a free diver, and he works with researchers and does photography. And he has to be up with close and personal with sharks, like right close to them. So he's a perfect example of someone who really does understand white sharks or sharks. And what you find out is, you know, this amazing, it's not amazing, but I went through that myself, that sharks are very maternal, that they feel that same kind of maternal glow, as one researcher, shark researcher in Mexico called it, this maternal glow. The fact that they are so so emotionally intelligent to be able to do their job. So really, I guess that was sort of an aha moment for me. I had to overcome my own kind of, you know, my JAWS prejudice, you know, mm-hmm. understanding that there's all of those kinds of emotions and sensibilities in a white shark who, you know, is now like with JAWS, is in this kind of, you know, symbolic, you know, the icon of terror for humans.
The use of the term emotional intelligence, though, and that is fairly applied to animals, you think?
Oh, yes. I mean, again, anything that we talk about ourselves, and I was going to say earlier about, you said anthropomorphism. Anthropomorphism is attributing human qualities to a non-human animal, right? And so essentially, with the science, the neuroscience says, well, no, I mean, anthropomorphism is fine, just like we were just talking about you. I'm making assumptions about you, which I have to be careful about, right? My projections. Same thing with other animals. So we can, what we know about ourselves, we can apply to sharks. What we know about sharks, we can apply to ourselves. And that's what we call bidirectional inference. Again, the caveat is we have to just sort of say, well, why are there differences? As I mentioned earlier, why did we develop all these weapons? Why do we kill all of these animals that never kill us or very, very infrequently? So those are the more interesting things. Why they choose not to do what they do or choose what they do.
Tell us about the Carrillo Center, if you would, and how it got started and what you do there.
Well, it's actually the Carrillo Center.
Carrillo's, oh, okay.
and it was started about 9 years ago. It was precipitated by my elephant work, elephant PTSD work. And there was so much interest and fascination with understanding at that time, and specifically animal minds and trauma. And so we established the Carrillo Center, and a large part of our work has been international, working with elephants, working with chimpanzees and things like that. And we have evolved over time, and now we, so a lot of our work has been research and documentation, but now we have, we're establishing two sanctuaries. We have one here, the tortoise and the hare for special needs desert tortoises here in the Applegate Valley, and hare, meaning domesticated rabbits. And then we have a second sanctuary that we're establishing in the southeast United States for elephants, the All Bull Elephants Sanctuary, ABES. And then our third sort of prong is education and outreach, where we're having a lot of different kinds of programs that are being developed for essentially focusing at trying to understand animal minds and how really understanding ourselves and how we individually and as a culture, as a species, can transform to be, as what we call it, become whom animals really need us to be.
The story of the star thrower is told on your website as a way of understanding the mission of Carrillo's. Can you tell it to us?
Well, the star thrower is a story by the well-known naturalist Loren Isley, and he tells this beautiful story, which you should read in full, but I'll give you a snapshot. Basically, Loren Isley, he describes how one time he's out on the beach, it's back east, and he's, no one's out there, you know, and he sees this man standing there at the shore, and he's not collecting, you know, he's not collecting shells, he's not fishing, he's just standing there, and he watches him for a few minutes, and he sees him, you know, leaning down and picking up a starfish that has been stranded by the tide, and he throws the starfish back into the water. Well, as a marine biologist friend of mine said, that's not what you do with starfish, actually. You should just place them in the water so it's not so traumatic. But anyways, Loren Isley is so moved by this, and he understands what the man is doing is that he's really saving these starfish one by one. So, you know, then he goes and he stands next to the star thrower, and he becomes a star thrower. It's very moving. And so why we love that as our theme is because, you know, we can feel so overwhelmed with all of the crises, you know, the extinctions, all these things that are happening, and actually get paralyzed by that and then very depressed. And so the star thrower story is really to inspire that we can, if we can do things, one gesture, like throwing that starfish back, completely changes everything. It's a complete universe. That particular starfish, he or she was a complete universe. So it's really trying to say, to empower people and, or, you know, encourage people to understand that the internal power that they have to really make profound change.
Were there other surprises in the studies of carnivores that you made? You were talking about being surprised by the great white shark. I understand there are other episodes.
Well, there was one about rattlesnakes. You know, our neighbors here, we have rattlesnakes. There's a wonderful woman. There's a whole chapter, and several people I talked to was really, I guess it was a surprise. It's less a surprise than really kind of a celebration. It was just a wonderful, joyful experience to hear these people talk about their deep understanding of these individuals, like rattlesnakes. So one woman, Melissa Amarello, she quit her PhD because she felt the work was really not promoting conservation for rattlesnakes, really had no purpose, and at the end of her study, she would have had to kill the rattlesnake subjects, which was totally contrary. And so she's now devoting her life to an organization called Social Snakes. It's a nonprofit. And so she and her partner, Jeff Smith, have studied in a very respectful way rattlesnakes and discovered this amazing social life, this social-emotional life that rattlesnakes have as communities and between each other as friends. So, again, it was not less. It wasn't so much of an aha, but it was like an affirmation. We'll put it that way, an affirmation of what the science does predict.
And you mentioned that you were starting the center for bull elephants in the Southeast.
Yes.
How far along is that?
Well, we have just gotten $2 million donation, which is our seed money to buy the land. So right now we're in the land search, and we'll be purchasing it probably sometime this summer, and then start building and hopefully be able to open doors for elephants soon.
Okay, we'll probably talk to you again about that down the road. Gabe Bradshaw is the executive director at the Carullo Center. She'll be speaking at Southern Oregon University tonight about the world through the eyes of our carnivore kin. Her most recent book is called Carnivore Minds, Who These Fearsome Animals Really Are. And as you're hearing, they're not terribly fearsome after all. Gabe Bradshaw, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.